And a very good Monday morning to all you fine Homo sapiens listening in Radio Land. It's time for a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. And I welcome to you my microphone mate, brother in broadcasting, and most importantly, partner in crime, partner in presidential politics, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman from Florida. And thank you again, Ron, for joining me on The Talking Place. How are you doing on this fine Monday morning so far?
I'm doing fine. I'm trying to recover from the weekend, from what's been happening.
You party animal, you. So lots has transpired since we last shared these airwaves. We have Bernie Sanders, apparently the winner in the caucuses in Nevada, even though neither of us really understand exactly what a caucus is, but has to do something with who may have a chance of becoming the nominee for his or her party. Are you surprised that Bernie Sanders appears to be the winner? Were you expecting your favorite Pete or maybe someone else?
I thought he'd be the winner, but not by as big a margin. He got 47%, I gather. The next place was Joe Biden with 19%, and apparently then Pete, although it's not fully counted, with 15%. I think they're the only two left that have a chance to stop him. I think, unfortunately, although I really liked Warren this past week, how she treated Michael Bloomberg, and I really was hailing her, I think the fact that she's way down and Amy Klobuchar probably is a sign that it's Joe or Pete, and really Pete, because I don't think Joe's going to be able to go the route. I don't think so. It's going to be Pete or Bernie at the end.
I think it might be time to put Biden out to pasture. That's pretty much what people are saying.
Well, South Carolina would be crucial. If he loses in South Carolina, that's over. You know, if Bernie wins that, it's going to be. It's very hard to predict Super Tuesday, which is only what 8 days away from now. But it's going to be a big day a week from now. You know, it'll be really be a big day with 14 states voting and all many major states.
Not surprisingly, Ron, there have been many surprises, including some of our fellow broadcasters who have said a few things that might have raised an eyebrow or two. And the biggie, drum roll please, is Mr. Chris Matthews, who would normally be thought of as a rather liberal kind of a dude, saying that, like myself, he doesn't like Bernie Sanders, that would probably put it mildly, and believes that Democrats are better off with four more years of Donald and his lovely wife, Melania, than they are with Bernie Sanders. Now, as you probably aren't surprised, Ron, I agree with him. I'm not hardly a fan of either, but I feel Donald Trump would be the better choice. At least he's an American with American principles. Bernie Sanders, I'm not sure what planet he's from. He's a citizen. So I guess from that sense, he is an American, but his policies, his promises, his fantasy world, his pipe dreams, they're about as American as Karen Pence is pretty. And as you know, I'm hardly a fan of what the mirror sees when Karen Pence looks at it. In fact, I'm not really a fan of hers at all. But again, at least she understands what capitalism is, and that's kind of how we roll here in this country. Bernie Sanders, Ron, has shown that he's a communist sympathizer. One or two generations ago.
Well, the word communist, he's not a communist sympathizer. But I do think Chris Matthews is going off the deep end, because to say he wants Trump for another 4 years when the presidency's already been destroyed a great deal and he's making it a dictatorship, I don't know how he could say that. I just don't get it. I disagree with Chris Matthews, and I think he may lose his job on MSNBC as a result. I wouldn't be surprised.
Bernie Sanders has shown that he supports these worker parties. Again, we're talking, you know, 1 to 2 generations ago. This is fairly recent. Certainly in my lifetime, even my lifetime as a young adult, he was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, which actually is rather close to where I went to college and where I worked in broadcasting in the 80s. And during the time that I went there, I actually kind of trying to jog my memory. I do remember hearing about him at that time, but I really wasn't that interested because I was hardly a supporter. And I was more to the left those days, but not that far to the left. But his alignment, Ron, with these socialist worker parties, things that he said about Russia, about how business and government is done in countries with very different governmental systems than ours, I make no apologies
well,
when I say
big support, not critic, of Cuba in the past under Castro and Nicaragua under Ortega. And that was disturbing to me all along. Yes, I mean, you know, he is definitely, I think in foreign affairs, he's probably more scary than in domestic affairs.
I
think they're both bad in foreign affairs in different ways. They back dictatorships on the left or the right.
No, I make no apologies, Ron. I feel he is a communist sympathizer. In terms of his own political affiliation, yes, socialist, but on the border of when a socialist becomes a communist. And people have said, and truthfully, all communists are socialists, not all socialists are communist. And I kind of wonder sometimes where Bernie sits. And even if I agree with his policies, they would never pass. As you've said, we need a much higher majority Democratic Congress. Even to
if we
think
had a 60% Democratic Congress, we could do probably everything he wanted. You know, it would be a similar thing, although more extreme, than FDR's New Deal and LBJ's Great Society. But we're not going to get a 60% Congress that's Democratic. No way.
I think you'd agree he has less of a chance of getting these policies he wants than anything Donald Trump might ask for when there's a lot of division in our government. And that's been a problem. We don't have the situation where Democrats and Republicans play well together. We're so divisive. They are at each other's throats. Nothing is really getting done. We have the Speaker of the House with her Pelosification, Nancy Pelosi ripping up Donald Trump's speech. It's ridiculous. We have what I think would be called a cold civil war, not a real civil war with battles and deaths, but a kind of like the Cold War with Eastern Europe. We have a cold civil war here in the United States. These people aren't getting along, and you're one side or the other, and you have people like me, and I think I'm represented more than people might want to admit, as an independent, that is, and I agree with some issues on both sides. One thing I do agree is we're all Americans, and I'm just disgusted that we appear to be so divisive and on different sides. Can't we just get along? Can't we just shake hands and try to come to a resolution? Because I'm not sure if anything is getting done.
Yeah, I'm still amazed, though, how old people, including the ones I do lectures for, like Pete, and yet young people like Bernie. It just makes no sense. You would think young people would like Pete, but they don't seem to care for him. It's just odd, the age difference. It really is a strange situation.
Young people should learn there's something called adulting, and this free stuff with some mysterious method of paying for it, that's not how it works. Older people understand that that's how our system functions. And it's really kind of a shame, but ironically, certainly no secret that Pete's being gay is more likely to be accepted among younger people, as to the young generation, being gay really isn't a big deal. Compare that, Ron, to when you were in school, what it was like, compared to what it's like now. Now, most older people, they either are like yourself, and that's fine, we don't care if you're gay, or it's, well, maybe I don't agree with it, but it's not going to stop me from voting for you for president. Never floats your boat, so to speak. Totally opposite from the general consensus among young people, yet Pete is more supported by the older generation, probably because he is more in the traditional economic mold, that he's a capitalist, albeit a rather liberal one, but understands that's how we do things. You don't just get free stuff. You pay for it. In a capitalistic society, you have a job, you maybe have independent wealth because you won the lottery or something, or you receive a governmental check, but for a reason, not because people just get a handout, and then you use that to pay your bills and live your life. That's, from my understanding, kind of how things function in this country. The fantasy world that Bernie Sanders is painting our young people is very dangerous. Now, I know
I'm
agree.
I'm concerned that there's going to be disillusion if he gets in and he can't accomplish them, you know, the goals. Then I think it's going to be really a shock to them, because I think that's what the result would be, yes.
Now, you would say, Ron, that my calling Bernie Sanders a communist sympathizer or borderline communist is being too harsh, but you can understand why I might feel that way. Even you're saying his support of these regimes that are very different from ours and are communist is very scary. And something really we need to get a grip on and understand.
But I'm also upset that our president deals with Putin, a former communist, KGB head, and loves him so much, it seems, and also that we have such support for authoritarian regimes of the right. I don't like either end. I like democracies. I think we need to promote NATO and South Korea and Japan, and he's not doing it, Trump, and I don't know how Sanders would deal with that either.
But we do agree that we have to get along and need to watch what comes out of our mouth, especially if we're in the public eye. Now, as a rather liberal person, I mean, not an extreme liberal, we want to, again, let people know Ron's beliefs are more lines of Joe Biden or Amy Klobuchar or a moderate Democratic-type person. You are a frequent watcher of Microsoft Network Broadcasting Company. Of course, that would be MSNBC. And you like most of their commentators. I believe Mr. O'Donnell is one of your favorites. This Chris Matthews statement, Ron, as you probably aren't surprised, I agree with him. You don't agree with him. Are you kind of surprised?
No,
is he kind of coming out of left field? Or is he someone who, as I've said, we need to watch Bernie Sanders, that he's extremely dangerous. And we may not be fans of Donald Trump, but you got to pick the lesser of evils. And the lesser of evils would be Donald. Is that kind of what is going through Chris's brain? Or what do you think's going on with that?
Honestly, I'm starting to wonder, even before this, and it may sound like I'm character assassinating, I think he's starting to show signs of dementia, Chris Matthews. He has been weird for a few years in things he says, I think. And also, I've always been annoyed with him that he has somebody on, and he asks a question, and 2 seconds later he jumps in. He never lets anybody, you know, finish a thought. And I just think he's annoying, and he's not Chris Hayes, and he's not Rachel Maddow, and he's not, you know, O'Donnell. And I just think, you know, I don't know. I just think that he's probably on his way out because I think he's seen as not always got his marbles together. That's my impression of him.
Yeah, I confuse Chris Matthews and Chris Hayes. I'm not quite sure why, but I think
at this point,
I think I'll know the difference. Now, Rachel Maddow, you know, I respect her. I respect her being open about her lesbianism. I respect her PhD, and she's extremely well spoken. But politically, we don't really see eye to eye. She is also a well-known member of the MSNBC crew. Right now, Ron, if we had the pleasure of having Rachel on the air with us, what do you think she would say if we asked her, Rachel, hey, Dr. Maddow, if you prefer, what do you think about what Chris Matthews had to say? Do you think he's nuts, or do you agree, or what would you like to contribute? What do you think she would say?
Well, you know, I haven't heard too much of what she's saying in the last few days because I've been busy with other things. I have a feeling she is not terribly comfortable with Bernie Sanders. I think she's not. And I don't know how O'Donnell is. I haven't heard enough. But people have complained, a lot of people at MSNBC are, quote, corporate liberals, and therefore that they're too critical of Sanders. I'm just not sure of how they all match up. I do know that Nicole Wallace, who worked for George W. Bush and is on there, definitely is a critic of Bernie and has been criticized for that because she's really a Republican in her background. But she's also very anti-Trump. So it'll be interesting to see how these people react if this is the final choice, Trump and Bernie. Will they actually say support Trump, or will they support a third-party candidate? You know, I don't know who it would be, and it could mess up the election. But you never know. There could be another Democrat who runs as an independent.
Yeah, MSNBC, the network that people say is extremely liberal. Seems like politics makes strange bedfellows and also makes strange enemies. And honestly, you know, Rachel Maddow, although I don't see eye to eye with her on many things, she's highly intelligent. She didn't get that PhD for nothing, believe me. She could have 10 PhDs with her brain cells. And I honestly no other way to say it. She's too smart to support someone like Sanders. She knows what he's talking about. She knows it's not possible.
Supportive of Sanders, but honestly, I'll have to watch this week and read more because it's still fluid and it's hard to know. A lot of them do oppose Sanders, but I'm not sure they all do, like Lawrence O'Donnell. I'll be curious to hear, you know, what he says during this week. MSNBC is becoming highly controversial, having, quote, liberals who are not liberal in the mind of some people.
Well, I don't see Sanders as being liberal. I see him as being very un-American. Well, he's also a whack job, and we both agree, Ron, he's not a good speaker. He's kind of grouchy. He really should comb his hair. And
he has a bald spot, by the way. I saw the back of his head. That doesn't matter.
Okay. I mean,
I'm just saying, he, like Joe, has a bald spot.
Yeah, I mean, Al Gore had the bald spot, too. But I could really don't care. You know, Eisenhower was bald. But nowadays, nowadays it seems like having a full head of hair does help if you're running for the highest office. And a more humorous note, Ron, this has kind of been going around the internet. Not sure if you saw this. We'll just take a break to joke a bit. There have been some photos of Pete, your candidate of choice, with a beard and also one with kind of a mustache. And many people have said that it's very flattering. I would agree. I think he actually looks good with a short beard.
Is it actually him, or it's just a picture they put it on his face?
I don't think it's a real picture. It's just kind of a Photoshop thing. But if you've seen these postings, these memes, it's rather flattery on him. And interesting, we haven't had a bearded president in a while. We kind of expect our president. Of course, all presidents have been men. I wouldn't mind changing that. And Amy Klobuchar, for example, I would have no problem with her taking the office. But, you know, men, they do seem to lose their hair. As they enter early middle age, it kind of affects different men differently. So having a full head of hair, being clean shaven, kind of being clean cut, does seem to help the image of the president. But we had Eisenhower, who was bald. We've had presidents with beards.
And Gerald Ford was quite bald, not completely, but quite a bit.
Yeah. President that many people, including two of us, believe is our greatest president, Lincoln. He was well known for his beard. And we have possibly our youngest president ever. With a beard and looking quite dapper, so that's kind of been going around the internet. Pete is just such an interesting.
Al Gore, after he lost, grew a beard for a while.
just an interesting candidate. Yeah. Just things about him that are unusual, but we certainly can agree that he's very intelligent, speaks many languages, and sometimes a bit of a surprise because he still seems a bit wishy-washy on the issues. But I think it's important to note he's smart enough that whatever he would come across if he were to be president, he would likely be able to solve. It's always good to have a president.
I think he'd be an outstanding president, Pete.
Use intelligence when that opportunity presents itself, as it often does.
I would prefer Chastain as his first partner over Melania, as you know.
Chastain as first dude, or whatever you'd refer to him as. Certainly would be a bit of a change for Melania. They're both.
Interestingly, Chastain's brother is repudiated him. He's a born again Christian minister, his brother. So it's a big controversy there because he claims that Chastain lied about that he was kicked out of the house and was homeless for a while. I'm not sure what the facts are, but there's a real brother in law problem there for Pete.
Well, that just makes it a little more fun, doesn't it? Let's turn to a website and news channel, Ron, which you're not a supporter of, at least. Well, a couple of their people are, but in general, you're not. Of course, that would be Fox News. Article in Fox News, Ron, very recently, from Paul Batura. Don't know the guy, but he's one of their people. And the article says, Ronald Reagan warned us about Bernie Sanders over 40 years ago. Now, Reagan, Ron, we both agree, was a great actor, a great American. We don't agree with a lot of his policies. Certainly was funny. He was smart and well-spoken, and never seemed to really take himself too seriously, but got down to business when needed. So I think from this end, we can respect what Reagan may have to say. And basically, what happened was Reagan warned us about the socialism preached by Bernie Sanders from his days where he was pretty much just known in Vermont. He had a radio show, Ron, as you probably know, which he did before he became president, after he was California governor. The article writes that throughout its nearly five-year radio run, Reagan preached that the promises of socialism were lies. He noted that we often grow so accustomed to them, however, that we lose the fear of the ideology itself. Reagan quotes a line he once spoke in a play, "I never knew what freedom was until I saw you lose yours." Back in 75, Ron, just 45 years ago, Reagan said, "Socialists ignore the side of man that is of the spirit. They can provide shelter, fill your belly with bacon and beans, treat you when you're ill, all the things that are guaranteed to a prisoner or a slave, but they don't understand we also dream, yes, even of owning a yacht." I don't know a better way to sum up the difference between socialism and capitalism, so I defer to the late Ronald Reagan. I agree with that. Yes, we're all provided for. But what if we have dreams? What if we want to make some money, work hard, even if it's because we're smart or good at sports or gifted in music or other arts? We want to buy a yacht. We want to buy a $10 million house. We want to buy a Rolls Royce. Capitalism gives us that right. But with socialism, that right is dampened. Is that reasonable? Ron, or is Reagan over-dramatizing, or am I over-dramatizing? Or is that really the difference between socialism and capitalism?
Author that you're mentioning. Can you send me that article after so I can look at it? I guess there might be some validity to what Reagan says, but I don't like to give Reagan too much credit in general, because I think that he was a liberal New Deal Democrat, and he switched to the Republican Party when he married Nancy and was influenced by her father, a surgeon. So I think he might have done it more out of his own advancements than about real principles. That's always my thought on Reagan.
Yeah, I mean, Reagan, again, there are things we don't agree on, but a lot of the things he said, which were more in a general sense rather than issue-oriented, I can definitely feel hit home. And that's, as an actor, that was something he was great at, but that was a skill that he carried to the presidency. Of course, many people feel he never really stopped being an actor. He was an actor when he was president, and I would somewhat agree with that. Versus Donald Trump, also
good at doing ceremonial duties. I always say we should keep him on. He's like the Queen of England. He could do the ceremonial duties. Yes,
like Donald Trump, also coming from show business, but maybe not having that show business mentality affected positively, like it did
never was.
So, interesting thing about that. I have sent Ron the article, and it is on FoxNews.com.
Yes.
Published. On last Sunday, Paul Bachura, Ronald Reagan warned us about Bernie Sanders. Read it. Let me know what you think. Send me an email, adam@wwgh1071.com. We invite all viewpoints, and as folks probably know, I'm not someone who says, you're stupid, I don't like you, I hate you, unfriend me, blah, 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 if I don't agree. I agree we're intelligent people. We can agree to disagree. We can still shake hands, be friends, hang out, all that good stuff. Again, I'm with my brother in broadcasting, partner in crime, microphone mate, Dr. Ron L. Feinman, discussing politics, presidential possibilities, and whatever else we can manage to get our hands dirty with. Ron publishes the blog, which he's been writing for the last 11 and a half years, theprogressiveprofessor.com. He wrote about Bernie Sanders yesterday, although we do replay this show, but it originally airs on Monday the 24th. He wrote about Bernie Sanders on the 23rd. We'll skip that because we've already kind of been out Bernied for this show, at least talking about Bernie exclusively. In fact, on Saturday of last week, he wrote, "News of Russians promoting Bernie Sanders, a delicate issue that requires a lot of thought." So let's get to the article from last Friday. We haven't talked about Elizabeth Warren. I have some respect for her, but she's just too far to the left, especially on things like immigration, for me to support her. But she certainly is an interesting person of high intelligence. And I do giggle a bit when I call her Pocahontas, one of the funny things that Donald Trump has uttered from his mouth. So last Friday, Rod, you write, "Further reflection on Elizabeth Warren, improved prospects for nomination." Performance of Warren in the Las Vegas Democratic presidential debate has sunk in, along with interviews she has had on CNN and MSNBC since her devastating criticism of former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. So, what's up with Elizabeth? Do you think she could still make it, or is she maybe being groomed as a vice president? You talk about the State of the Union. What is the state of Elizabeth right now?
Well, I'm surprised she's done so poorly as against Sanders, since she's in that direction, not as far as him, but pretty much. I think it's, again, an issue of women. I don't know if women can be nominated and win. That's the whole thing. I think it might be that's part of the problem. But she really comes across as much more genuine and appealing than he does, certainly. And I just think she would be a great debater against Trump, as I say in this article. It's just, looking at results so far, she's done poorly. So if she doesn't do well by Super Tuesday, you have to wait another week for now, 8 days. But if she doesn't do well on Super Tuesday and Joe doesn't do well, and Klobuchar, they're all gone. I still think Pete might be the only alternative left against Bernie at this point, but we have to see. But I am more impressed with Warren, I must say, and so is my son, who agree that Warren and Pete are the best combination, and possibly maybe Warren for president and Pete for vice president to give him more grooming time. I don't know. But, I never thought much of Warren, but I really felt good after that debate. But then the results, how poorly she did ending up in fourth place in Nevada, makes me wonder.
She does kind of grow on you, and she seems approachable, too. It's like you hear her talk, and she just seems like a cool person you could have a cup of coffee with, not distant like some of the other candidates. I'm just concerned that she is too liberal, and things like border control. I'm not comfortable with how she feels because it's not consistent with how I feel. But I do like her intelligence, do like her seemingly approachable nature, and she's well-spoken. And she looks good in the pantsuit, too, kind of like the same thing with Hillary, the pantsuit thing for the female presidential candidates. The pantsuit, the short hair, it seems to be a image that the female presidential candidates have, and maybe there's something there. Who knows? I mean, image is important to presidents.
She's very likable, and I did write an article on Facebook. Likeability is important, and I think Joe is likable. I think Pete is, and I think Elizabeth is. The others, not as much.
Yeah, it's important because this is a human being. It's not some computer. And you have to look at that. I mean, again, look at the image, and including what they look like, which what we discussed, Pete, and this beard that's kind of going around Facebook. Well, it's part of the image. I mean, do you agree, Ron, that Justin Trudeau's popularity is partly because he is boyish looking and he is good looking and in good shape? I mean,
does it hurt?
it's part of the image, you know? And this person represents the United States in many different ways. And Trudeau, just such an interesting case in point. His father, having the job he has now, his father being quite a bit to the right from him. And can he separate from Pierre, his dad, and be his own person? Apparently he can. So you just never know how these things kind of end up. We have the Roosevelts. I mean, they were distant cousins, but they had the same last name, so people understand Theodore and Franklin are related, albeit not very closely. But their politics were quite different, Theodore being an old-school Republican, not like the Republicans of today, and FDR being quite liberal, although he sort of had to be, considering that he had to stop the Great Depression. And many people have called him a socialist, democratic socialist. I don't agree with that, but I would certainly say he's quite a bit to the left of his cousin, fourth cousin, three times removed, whatever it was, Theodore Roosevelt.
Also was called a democratic socialist by many. I don't think he's a socialist, and I think many people now are critical. He didn't do enough.
Yeah, it's a relative term, and it's also been discussed that democratic socialist, is that an oxymoron? Can you be democratic and be a socialist? I would say not necessarily a complete oxymoron, but not exactly an accurate term either. Still kind of undecided about that, but as you know, folks, I'm not a fan of socialism. I'm a capitalist, but a compassionate capitalist, and that's kind of what I think our country is all about. We had our show last President's Day, Ron, the 17th, but you had not written your blog yet. I think your blog is interesting and does talk about the personalities behind the presidents. You write there are presidents who have compassion and empathy as very clear parts of their personalities, and those who have absolutely no such compassion or empathy. I wonder if Donald Trump is in that latter category. We'll find out.
Yes, he is, if you look at the article.
So let's start out with the good ones. The 11 presidents with compassion and empathy would include the following in chronological order. Let's just go backwards because we talked about Roosevelt. Both Roosevelts are on that list, actually, and I agree. We're both very compassionate. Theodore Roosevelt was a bit of a loudmouth, but he was in a caring fashion. Kind of like myself.
Narcissistic, like Trump, as I point out in the article on narcissism I wrote around that time.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to spew forth his opinions, but he did so in a caring fashion and had policies that to this day are thought of as outstanding. So going backwards, we have Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Lyndon Johnson, Harry Truman, John F. Kennedy. A lot of Democrats there. Why aren't there any Republicans? Yes. Wasn't George H.W. Bush a compassionate person?
Not to the same extent, I don't think. Not in the way that these were. I mean, I made a list of 11. I could have gone on, but not really in my mind, no. But I think Garfield was, even though he was in office a very short time, he was promoting in that short time before he got killed, civil rights and education, you know, public education. He had goals, but he never got to achieve them. That's why I put him on the list. And, of course, Lincoln and John Quincy Adams before that.
Then we have the presidents who have the least empathy. I don't think anybody would be surprised that you include on the list Donald John Trump. Other people on the list who might be a bit surprising, Woodrow Wilson. Wasn't quite sure why he might be on the list, but he's a little bit before my time.
He was a white supremacist, and he was opposed to women's suffrage.
Richard,
minus, he's gone down in ratings of presidents, you know, from 6 to 9 to 11 on the C-SPAN listings of historians. So he's out of the top 10 now, just ahead of Obama as far as the historical rating in 2017.
Richard Milhouse, a.k.a. Tricky Dicky Nixon, interesting person. Again, he, to this day, is thought of as a genius in foreign policy. The problem is that he associated with people who were, out of lack of a better term, crooked, and that kind of did him in. And that's his legacy, probably, until the end of time. You put Reagan down as someone who lacked compassion and empathy, I would say that is logical. He could have done something about AIDS, for example, because it certainly escalated during his presidency, including affecting many of his Hollywood cronies, something I'll never fully understand. I mean, he was compassionate in some ways, but especially with things like AIDS, he wasn't, and kind of a shame.
And only when Rock Hudson was sick, he suddenly got interested in it.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to wait for a friend of yours to be afflicted by something to care about that problem. That's a bit hypocritical, and I would tend to agree in that regard. Now, George W. Bush, why do you find him to be on that list of least compassionate and empathetic presidents?
Hurricane Katrina, the way he handled that, I think, is a sign of that.
And as someone in Florida, Ron being in Florida, knowing all about hurricanes, he is better prepared to talk about that than I am. But you've indicated that Jeb Bush, his brother, who was your governor, did do a good job with hurricane preparedness.
Yeah, he was not a president, but I think Jeb was good. But I think George W., this was about New Orleans, really, with Hurricane Katrina, not Florida. So I think
right, but that you're in an area where hurricanes are prevalent, so any hurricane-related thing does affect you.
And his vice president, Dick Cheney, was, I call him the intelligent Trump, but still a nasty individual like Trump, just that he's intelligent more than Trump, Dick Cheney.
And don't go hunting with him. That's kind of the lesson we've talked about in the past.
Yes.
So, interesting thing with the Bushes, Ron.
Trying to apologize to Cheney, not the other way around, which I thought was wild.
Yeah, your opinions about the three Bushes, who are well known, are kind of different. You really don't like at all. Like, you quite a bit dislike George W. Bush. You like Jeb Bush a little bit.
He's a nice guy, but as far as his record. No, George H.W. looks better. Jeb is sort of like in the middle because he wasn't bad as a governor, but I don't particularly care for him. But I would have preferred him to Trump in 2016 if I had to choose.
Yeah, so I mean, you like some things about him. You feel he was an okay governor, did good for hurricanes, and that's an important thing in your part of the country.
Yeah.
That's one of the probably the top three things a governor must do in Florida and Louisiana and other hurricane-prone states. George H.W. Bush, he's a good man, very qualified with his resume before he entered office, but some of his policies you aren't overly enthusiastic about. That kind of sums up your opinion about the Bushes. Now, we're approaching Super Tuesday, a little more than a week away. That's going to be the deciding junction, for lack of a better term. Will some of the candidates who are considered somewhat marginal, Klobuchar, for example, drop out? Will they surge? Will Bernie continue to become somewhat of a front runner? Will Buttigieg continue to do well? Is it time to put Biden out to pasture? Is that pretty much what's going to happen on Super Tuesday, that might be one of the biggest days in modern history as we sort out all the Democratic contenders?
Yes, it's going to be a very big day because California, Texas, Tennessee, and also Virginia and North Carolina and Minnesota and Massachusetts are all going to be voting. And of course, Minnesota is Klobuchar's state, I want to remind you, and Massachusetts is Warren's state. So that'll be interesting to see whether they do better there. If they don't do better, at least there, wow, then I think that's the end, you know.
I would agree. If you can't win your home state, especially a state that's considered a Democratic stronghold, you probably should pack your bags and pick a different line of work, or at least in her case, go back to being a senator. I don't really know much about Minnesota other than the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the Minnesota Twins, and a few other things. Rose Nyland, of course. you probably know more than I do, Ron. Is Klobuchar popular in Minnesota?
She's done very well in her Senate race. She even won Michelle Bachmann's congressional district, which is quite amazing. She always mentions that she, you know, Michelle Bachmann was a right-wing, woman member of the House who was really a wacko, but she's, thank God, out of Congress now. She left it.
So she is popular in Minnesota, but Minnesota, yes, being a fairly left-wing state, might they feel that Pete would be a better choice, or Bernie? Or are they just going to root for the home team and vote for one of their own? Amy Klobuchar.
I want to say, but like Massachusetts with Warren, she didn't win New Hampshire. Of course, Bernie did, but I'm thinking, okay, it's not the same state, but actually I thought she would win more likely in New Hampshire, but she didn't. How can she even win Massachusetts against him is the issue. I have a feeling no.
Yeah, again, with New England in general being to the left, although New Hampshire being relatively conservative, as we've talked about, not quite as liberal as some of the other states, southeastern New Hampshire, where most of the population is essentially a suburb of Boston, and that's capital of Massachusetts. That's where Elizabeth hangs her hat. So the fact that she didn't do quite as well as expected is alarming, and I would imagine right now as we speak, Elizabeth's people are scrambling to see how they can remedy that if they have any hopes that she will become the president of the United States of America. Let's switch gears a bit, Ron. Somewhat of a surprise for you. Sometimes we replay our show on Tuesday and Thursday. Sometimes I talk about computers, and sometimes I do something else. Well, this Tuesday and Thursday, Ron, Mike Essen, our favorite or least favorite conservative commentator, will be joining me on the microphone as part of the Out of the Computer Guy show and political commentary. That should certainly be interesting. Certainly there are things that Mr. Essen and I agree on, and there are things that Mr. Essen and I disagree on. But like with yourself and myself, Ron, we can still shake hands and be friends and respect each other because we're big boys, and we're not going to say, unfriend me, I hate you, you're stupid, blah, blah, blah. We can still agree to disagree and understand we're all Americans and we're all on the same team. On my show with Mike, Ron, we will start out by talking about some controversial topics. And, of course, the big one where Mike and I don't agree is abortion. I am pro-choice, very pro-choice, but not pro-abortion. I think a woman should be allowed to have one, but it shouldn't be encouraged. It's not a form of birth control. And the idea of a convenience abortion, I'm not overly cool with, but I do believe the ultimate decision lies with the woman, hopefully in consultation with the father, because, as I say, it takes two to tango. I think we understand what that means without giving TMI. Something else I'm going to bring up, and Mike Essen has talked about this recently on his social media feed. He is not quite as in favor of marijuana legalization as I am. He is in favor in some areas for medical marijuana, but thinking that you can just go to your private home and smoke a joint legally, he and I don't agree. I say it's fine. He says it's not. So there are things we agree and things we disagree. Ron and I do agree on marijuana. Neither of us are users. Well, I have used it, but I'm not, certainly not someone who does it regularly. Let's just put it that way. But I do agree that if you are a big boy or big girl and you want to use it in the privacy of your own home or somewhere else where it might be welcome, like a lounge specifically designed for this indulgence, I say it's okay. And one of the many reasons why I think it's okay is that it can be taxed, and the tax is used for things that can make our country better. There's been a joke, as I've told you, Ron, here in Ohio, where we have a big problem with potholes and roads being somewhat being somewhat unsavory. Call it the pothole tax. Yeah, use the money to fix the roads. Governor DeWine raised the gas tax shortly after he entered office, which I wasn't happy about, but if it's used to improve the roads, I'm not going to cry about it that much. But I'd rather see marijuana get legalized. That way, this pothole tax can be used to fix the potholes. And I would expect that pot would actually go down in price if it were legal. Neighboring states, nearby states, Illinois, Michigan, D.C., not a state, but kind of like a state, they've made recreational marijuana legal, And those taxes can be used for some good purposes. So that's a preview of what Mike Essen and I will be talking about on Tuesday and Thursday. We'd like to prevent...
I think you should label it potheads and potholes. It's just funny, the combination of that, yeah.
Yeah, we like to... Well, you know, I like puns, so that's always a good way to describe it. We like to present differing viewpoints, and with me being an independent... when I talk to Ron, we agree on some things, disagree on others. We just talk about history and non-controversial topics, as we've done today. Mike Essen, agree on some things, disagree on others, or just shoot the breeze on other topics. And that's...
Yeah, I wanted to mention, I also wrote around President's Day about narcissistic presidents and smart and dumb presidents. So I don't know if we have time to do it, but I think it might be interesting to bring it up.
Yeah, we got a minute or two. I'll just talk a little more quickly. Not surprisingly, yeah. Ron, you also listed Donald J. Trump as among our least intelligent presidents. I can't say I was overly surprised by that. But interestingly, the only other president who is recent on that list is George W. Bush. Everyone else...
And Warren G. Harding, WWGH, named after him.
Okay, well, we'll apologize to the namesake of our station, but you're not the only person who believes that Warren G. Harding was not one of our most intelligent presidents. Now, on the list of...
He's one of the bottom five, actually, in most rankings.
But on the list of intelligent presidents...
In the American Political Science Association poll, Harding is above Donald Trump.
You've included Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Jimmy Carter, Tricky Dicky, John F. Kennedy, and a few others, including Abraham Lincoln.
And T.R. and Wilson, yes, and Garfield.
Interestingly,
and
you didn't include T.R.'s fourth cousin six times removed, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
No, he's not considered usually as being as smart, you know, more crafty than smart, as how most scholars see him.
Right, so he's crafty, but you're talking about book smart, IQ smart.
Yes.
And so Theodore Roosevelt would definitely be on that list. Now, interestingly, this is more equal between Democrats and Republicans than the other list about compassionate. You feel that in
yes.
All other things being equal, Democratic presidents are more compassionate. But in terms of intelligence, it's kind of split. Clinton, Obama, yes. Carter, Democrats, Nixon, Republican, Kennedy, Democrat. Wilson was a Democrat, right? I'm not even sure. I think he
yes,
was.
Yes, that's correct.
I think
Democrat.
So. I'm not Googling it. I'm just thinking. I think he was a Democrat, but yes. I'm really not sure.
But he is.
T.R., a Republican, albeit a very liberal Republican, especially by today's standards. I'm not even sure. I guess Garfield. Garfield was a Democrat, right? Or am I wrong?
No, a Republican. He got killed after only a few months. It's a real loss, you know.
That's what happens when you don't use Google. You try to go by memory, and yeah, Garfield was a Republican. Lincoln, a Republican, although again...
ever elected directly to the White House from the House of Representatives, which is quite an interesting thing.
Lincoln, again, a Republican, but hardly like a modern Republican. And again, most people probably think he is a Democrat, but he's not. Adams and Jefferson and John Quincy Adams. With someone as far back as John Adams, Thomas Jefferson was well-known as being a very smart, clever president. Adams, although he was the second president and he was Washington's vice president, is a bit more obscure. How do you quantify the intelligence of someone like Adams who goes back over 200 years?
Well, based on his writings, his speeches, and the fact that he was one of the people on the committee to draft the Declaration of Independence, along with Jefferson. So that's what puts him up there. And his son, who wrote a diary for 68 years, amazing, brilliant man, John Quincy Adams. Such a person I really would love to have met.
So you can do some detective work and decide, not from your own knowledge of what that person has done in your lifetime or just before your lifetime, just taking a look at what that person has done in history and what that person has written and quantify from that method. Makes sense. No disagreement. Well, as my mama would say, Ron, time flies when you are having fun. Our show has come to a conclusion, an ending. It's finished, but that's okay. We shall return to the airwaves very soon, quite possibly on the eve of Super Tuesday. That'll be a good show.
And after South Carolina, yes.
And again, folks, please do listen to myself and Mike Essen on Tuesday and Thursday afternoon. between about 2:13 p.m. and 3 Eastern time.
You're going to have two shows with him, or it's going to be repeated on Thursday?
I'm going to repeat the show from Tuesday on Thursday because it's going to be so good. Like our show is so good, I repeat it. I make it available on our website. Don't want to miss it, folks. I assure you, your ears and your brain will thank you. Ron, thank you again for joining me on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Adam Lepp here on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And like Hillary, I have a private email server for the station, so send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Unlike Hillary, I don't delete any emails. I read every single one of them. Adam at WWGH1071.com.